Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Unlimited Realities. I am your host, Lisa Zimmer, and today I am very blessed to present to you a visionary, a humanitarian. Our guest today is Mira Gandhi, who is not only a philanthropist and social activist, but Mira brings light where there is darkness all over the world. Her incredible, tireless energy has promoted numerous charities globally, and she has worked within the organizations and foundations to make a difference for those who do not have the resources to make a difference for themselves. I'm waiting for Mira to call in from Hong Kong, and I'm just going to talk a little bit about her foundation. Her foundation is called the Giving Back Foundation, and she has written both a book and produced a documentary highlighting the many incredible charities globally that are contained within the Giving Back Foundation and others. The Giving Back Foundation is her foundation that she established with her husband back in 2010, her husband Vikram. And it's a 501c3 tax-exempt entity registered in the United States with offices in New York, London, and Hong Kong. The Giving Back Foundation assists in the education of women and children, addressing illness, poverty, and suffering. Its motto is, "We are to the universe only as much as we give back to it." The foundation also exists as a platform for debate and discussion as philanthropic activities continue to evolve around the world. So I am waiting for Mira to call in, and we will be discussing her wonderful organizations. She is quite an incredible soul. She is a person who comes from India. She's both Indian and Irish, which is, she, when you see her face, she has the look of a true angel, and she comes from such an incredible wealth of culture and insight and wisdom that her ability to be unconditional is just really angelic. And without further ado, I'm going to introduce you now to Mira Gandhi. So without further ado, Mira, thank you so much for being with us today. Hi, welcome to Unlimited Reality.
Thank you, Lisa.
How are you? Oh, I'm so glad to have you on today. Your organization is so very deeply inspiring, and your book and your documentary, I was talking to the audience before we brought you on, and it has just, you bring light where there is darkness, and what you have been able to encompass in your young years has been absolutely phenomenal. So without further ado, we're just going to just dive right into, let's talk about what the Giving Back Foundation consists of, because where we are going with this, it's really focusing a lot upon the education of women and children, and it really addresses both health, illness, and poverty, and all of the suffering that so many have to go through and don't have the resources to help themselves. So these charities are just absolutely phenomenal, and they're global. So what do you feel is the need in regard to when we're dealing with women and children globally? There seems to be different needs within each country because of many different aspects that each country either respects or doesn't give as much support to the female or the children gender and energy. Do you find that some countries are more respectful of that, or and others just need to be reminded? I mean, are you? We find so much here that, you know, there's a lot of disrespect and lack of support here for women.
Well,
what I've really found in running the foundation, which is essentially now really the first sort of global foundation of its kind, because we actually have offices on four different continents, which was the theme of the film, giving back across four continents. And what I've found is that need is universal. Everyone has some kind of need. And to that person, their need is most important. The person who doesn't have eyes, eyesight is important to them. For someone who needs a pen to finish an exam, need is important to that person. But what we have found is that need, for example, in Asia and the developing countries is very, it's more basic need-based, where in the West and the U.S., it's aspiration-based. People need more programs to promote women leaders. If people are educated through high school, then they really would like to be educated through college. If they have college, they want to make a shift career-wise, then they want to be educated more, they need a lot. So the need, it's just different, but right. Need is everywhere, and I feel that we need to address it in whatever way the organizations want. I mean, we work with St. Michael's, and it's amazing to us that the girls actually, when they sit around with us, they talk about what they want to do. And there used to be a time where kids in those kind of hostels, their aim was, I mean, they would be happy being house help. And now they talk about wanting to be lawyers, doctors, they want to go on to college. And the internet has also changed people's reach and people's desires. They've seen more, and now they desire more. So it's very exciting.
And there's also this, you know, this global aspect within the charities, within the book that I'm reading. But what can we do, you know, as Americans? Sometimes the average American is very stunted in regard to what's going on out there and what the needs of other countries and people are. So they're a little bit, you know, a little bit ignorant or a little bit naive. What can we do to impart upon our children in the United States for an awareness to help others, even if, you know, we're not coming from affluence, but we're coming from, you know, an integrity and a heart base of humanitarianism, where we really want to reach out and help others? How can we, as parents and educators?
Well, you know, Lisa, first of all, I have to say that Americans are the most generous people I have seen in the world. And I actually think, coming from the time of the Great Pilgrims, Americans, I mean, look at the way the tax is structured. It's structured towards giving. I learned about organized philanthropy in the U.S., having lived in the U.S. for 26 years, which is now helping me in my mission all over the world. And I think even though America is so ahead, first of all, I do want to say that Americans are extremely generous. And while know about all kinds of, you know, different issues and different cultural things because they're separated by two great oceans, I think American hearts are just so incredibly generous. As a group, they will be the first to pick up and pitch in, the first to open their wallets. What can we do to educate young Americans? I really think that schools need to do more. They need to have more inspirational speakers come in and really talk about how people can take that giving leadership into their colleges and then into the workplace and then into the universe as grown adults. I think we need to have more ways to educate the mindset of young people. And that's really something that I've been focused on, the Giving Back Foundation. I have been going into schools. I've had a couple of very, very successful talks at Birch Lennox, and the kids have actually, in Manhattan, and the kids have actually come forth with suggestions and ideas. I feel like it has to start in schools, and I feel that about the rest of the world too. Just today I was thinking that I want to do more in Hong Kong schools. We need to start now. For example, right. My heart and mind really was developed at 16 when I was going to Mother Teresa's Ashadan, and I met Mother Teresa, and I firsthand experienced the joy of giving and the joy of being with people whom you could give to. It's very empowering.
Right, and it's one of those things that when we plant the seed in the young, it really does take fruition, and there's that ability of compassion and sensitivity that really opens up the heart. And if we can just like bring that about in a more common
just
way,
the awareness.
In our
just
schools.
The awareness.
Right. Exactly.
And I also feel that if we plant that seed, to use your expression, when kids are young, we just won't be sad because there would be no time to be bored and there would be no time to be sad because, I mean, there's always someone to give to, and then that giving and receiving and sharing, it's just such an incredibly empowered way to live.
It truly is, and it's tapping into that unconditional heart, and that is, you know, that's really where the juice of the energy lives within us. You know, that's the soul of who we are when we can give unconditionally in love to another and know that we're making a difference for somebody else.
Actually, giving unconditional love is the most powerful thing because you're truly not trying to get anything in return, and that's just such an incredibly beautiful way to live.
Yes, it is. I totally agree. It's something that I think if we can come from that place within ourselves, it's learned by example with our children, and there's that trickle down effect that really helps that change and that shift in awareness and compassion, and that's what the planet really, really needs. Let's get into a little bit about how this is brought together within the charities, and this is more of dealing with the business aspect, but you talk throughout the book in the book about microfinance institutions. Can you explain to us a little bit about what microfinance institutions are as they're poverty focused?
Absolutely. Now, this was started by Muhammad Yunus, and his idea was to give loans that had no collateral to the poorest of the poor, so small loans like $200, $300, $100 to start small businesses. So women, if they bought, three dozen mangoes and then sold them at the profit, they put the money back in, and before they knew it, they had a small stall that was selling mangoes, fruits, papayas, etc. And even though it has to be paid back at the end of the month, it enabled people to run their own businesses. And when I went to Morocco, Alex Counts, the president of Grameen, he set up for me to meet some of these microfinance businesses in Fez. And I'm so glad that Alex did that because I was amazed to see these women. They had clothing boutiques. They had fruit stands. They had, that's my son who just came in. Hi, Kabir. All sorts of businesses that they had started, and they were just doing incredibly well. And also they were very much in touch with the community because the local inspectors would come by to see how they were doing. They knew them by name. They knew that they were running legitimate businesses. And I just felt that the whole environment was so empowered. They were making trips to Spain to bring in the cotton goods, and it was just hugely successful. And in India, this is one of the biggest movements because it's not a handout, it's a hand up. And I think especially for women, it's just an excellent way to come out of poverty.
And you also have the Reach and Heal programs where it really caters to India's children. It really was shocking to read that approximately 53% of India's children have faced some form of sexual abuse. How does this charity and the Reach and Heal program assist these children in India?
Well, Reach and Heal, largely through sports. There are a lot of sports programs set up, and the person who is behind it is someone called Rahul Bose, who is an Indian Bollywood star who actually went to high school with me, and he has completely thrown himself behind this and has made this made it very popular for a lot of people to get involved and give, and so they've been able to raise a lot of money to set up many concrete programs, so it's actually been extremely successful. The other child abuse charity I talk about in the book is actually based in Paris. I mean, you wouldn't think of it being such a big problem in a country like France. But Omaira Sellier started this program called Innocence in Danger, where the children go to camp so that they can heal, and the abusers are actually brought to task. They are very strongly prosecuted in the French court. So, I mean, she's doing incredible work in the West. I mean, it's just incredible that you wouldn't imagine this sort of atrocities exist. But, and for me, like, I could personally, I find that so harsh, and it would be so hard for me to do it, but I'm so glad that through the Giving Back Foundation, we can support other people who really have the strength to go out in the field and affect real change.
That's incredible, and what a difference it makes, because it's really getting to the root of the problem, which is the person who's doing the harm. And so it's not just, you know, putting a Band-Aid on it. You're really digging in and going to the root of the problem and nurturing the victims as well. That's an incredible foundation.
Yeah, in fact, it is. And Humaira, I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but just with the echo from Hong Kong, sometimes I just come in when you're finishing something. Humaira said in the film, and I think I left it in, but I remember the interview so vividly because I did that myself with her, where she talks about that, you know, those who stand by and watch the sex trade or watch child abuse, if it comes their path and they don't say anything about it or don't do anything about it, she's like, you know, you are equally responsible. So be alert as you go through life. Be alert that you support us by not silently letting these things happen.
Right. And this is, you know, it's one of those things of the awareness, like you said in the beginning of our interview, is so important, because it's so convenient for people to stick their head in the sand if, you know, it's uncomfortable or it's something they don't want to deal with. But the fact remains that there is unpleasantry as well as blessings and gifts on this planet. And in order to heal, you know, those unpleasantries need to be addressed. And, you know, in dealing with such unbelievable and incredible focuses upon all of these charities, do you find that some government...
I think that's one, you know, that's, of course, the sad part of it, but my book talks about so many other incredible, uplifting things out of it. It's a happy book. I mean, it talks about Dina Menon right there in New Jersey, who started Kalashree Dance Academy, and hundreds and hundreds of Indian girls and American girls go through this Indian Classical Dance Academy, and it's a rigorous 6-year training where they learn all sorts of Indian classical dance, and they spend hours after school practicing and having fun, and it's a not-for-profit, and it keeps the culture alive, and it introduces other people to this uplifting culture. I mean, there's so many people doing great, happy, incredible things, and the book talks about that as well. I mean, I just want to get away from that.
No, you definitely have it. And you have it sectioned off in different chapters as far as, you know, children and families and health and then also
and
the
women.
Environment.
Yeah.
And women and the environment is something that, you know, you talk about or there's a section with the Waterkeeper Alliance as well as you know, you have Habitat for Humanity and in India building homes for those who need homes. And you have all these wonderful giving, life-enriching programs that come through within our ecosystem as being a self-sufficient system. How can we as humans in consuming the natural resources learn to become more respectful and benefit both ourselves and the payback of what the resources provide, as in the Waterkeeper Alliance. You have the scenic Hudson.
The Waterkeeper Alliance is Robert Kennedy Jr.'s charity and his endeavor, and he I've been to some of his fundraisers where he actually invites people off on this 5-day water sports filled activity and raises money for Waterkeeper Alliance. And many times he said that, you know, start small. If you're on a boat, don't throw garbage into the river. If you're mooring, pull up your rope, make sure it doesn't drag and you don't drag extra sand into the river. He's like, start small. And after that, I mean, love the environment, close your taps, don't waste water. I mean, small changes can make big swooping, you know, effects in the end. You know, we have to all start small. But I think when it comes to the environment, all of us need to be, I think, much more vigilant. I feel like for the E-Enhanced book, which is coming out in February, I want to expand that section because I feel like we need to focus on that more. We really do. The planet is slipping by. We need to do a lot more, and we all need to be more aware, including myself.
Well, it is. It's one of those things where it's something that we're on red high alert. You know, it's a very important aspect to respect, and the fact that you are just going and going and going and going in regard to making such a positive change here. It's remarkable. Do you find that there
are? Thank you. I don't know. It's just that the right people, the universe. Like, you know, we once talked about this in an email, where, you know, the universe just sends you the right people. It's just important to be open and say, you know, I want to walk with you, or will you walk with me? Because together, one and one is 11. Ned Sullivan, who heads Scenic Hudson, is also doing some incredible work preserving land, getting people to buy portions of land that can be preserved. And he's very big on creating trails because he believes that young people in school on the weekend, in the summer, in the spring, they should be out there on the land walking the trails. And so he's doing a lot of work, you know, to preserve the land in the Hudson Valley. And in fact, on May 3rd, I have a book launch at the Franklin Delano Roosevelt Library, and he has invited a lot of young people to come to that because he believes that it's the young people that are going to preserve the planet.
Yes.
So, I
yes.
mean, that's
wonderful. That is wonderful because it is. There is an awakening, and, you know, you're with many well-known people throughout the book. There's a lot of people who are making a difference because of their positioning. And you have one in here where we're very familiar with is U2's Bono in his grassroots organization where he works closely with policymakers and also African activists. Do you find that some charities are more received by the governments within the charitable organizations than other countries or governments? Have you ever found any resistance from a government in regard to wanting to help their people?
No, but I will say that I'm very pleased to see that in India, for example, the Indian government has had a very sort of hands-off policy when it comes to not-for-profits, and as a result, I think not-for-profits have been able to flourish in India. I mean, whether it's putting on a conference or starting a honey not-for-profit, a lot of women are engaged in the honey business, or even collecting buttermilk. I mean, all the not-for-profits have been able to really flourish in India because the governments actually haven't gotten involved and made it too regimented. You don't have to apply for too many licenses. As long as you're compliant with the Section 80G, which is the tax-exempt status, they pretty much let you work with people, which I think is great. But I think every country wants not-for-profits to do their bit. I mean, I think UK is sort of, I think they're going to be changing their policy on tax on non-for-profit donations and their tax policy, and I hope that doesn't happen because I would hate to see tax not-for-profit donations in the UK dwindle, because as it is, not-for-profits are having a hard time. But by and large, I think governments they want to do a lot. Like in Africa, there's just, it's a pity because every need is so great. I feel like the government has been able to do as much as they should do probably for their people.
Right. You also you've worked within even the Lumba Foundation, where it works with widowed women, who also works within the United Nations. So there's actually crossovers within the charitable organizations and different aspects that also gain support. So I was very, very interested to find out that widowed women in other countries are really devalued so much, and that so much so that the United Nations supports this Lumba Foundation. Now, one thing I want to just, because I see this book as such a pivotal transformation in regard to your soul mission and where you're at as a person. And at the end of your book, you're actually walking through a fire. And I would just like you to talk a little bit about what was going on with you internally, spiritually, within yourself, as you were walking through that that very incredible visual and experience that I'm sure you felt on many different levels.
Well, first of all, I ended with the walking. First of all, walking on fire is not that hard. It's more the fear of, like, walking on those coals. But I promise you, once you do it, it's just so easy, and it's over before you know it. So it's really mind over matter, and the fire walk is very illustrative of that. And that's why I ended my book saying, in Eleanor Roosevelt's word, was you must do the things you think you cannot do, because honestly, that's what I got from the fire walk. What was going through my head was basically what the instructor tells you. He tells the group, he's like, here's a bed of hot boiling coals, and you have to look ahead, think of what you want to do or what you want to achieve, and just walk on the coals. And that's exactly what I did, and I was actually the first person to walk on those coals from the group. So I'm really happy that it was a woman in macho China, or friends, or wife, you evolved. So nothing against the men, but that's what was going through my head. And it was also a time in Hong Kong where I was there and I was adjusting to a whole new life, and I was really missing, my one kid was at Georgetown. I felt like the family was all over the place, and it was just a very inspiring evening. And so I would recommend, if anyone has the opportunity to do it, you should, because it's really very mentally strengthening. The only thing I would say is, do not put those hot feet of yours into a cold bucket of water. It's better just wait to cool down naturally on the grass, because otherwise you will have blisters and then you won't be able to walk. I mean, after 2 hours, my feet were so blistered I couldn't put my shoes back on.
Oh, good advice. Thank you for that. Because, in looking at your face, you were so focused, and you could tell that there was such a shift going on as you were going through that process. And that's why I wanted to bring it through, because this is such a powerful book, and your documentary film that's also based on the Giving Foundation. It's an incredible light that you're shining upon the darkness that exists, and the help and the support and the gift and the love and the unconditionalism that is out there, that people really do want to help and make a difference, and that help and support is really happening on so many different levels. And Mira, it has just been a pleasure having you on Unlimited Realities today. Thank you so much for being my guest. And I look forward to your new book coming out in February so we can talk again.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
I have truly appreciated it. Is there any last words you would like to say to our audience today in regard to the Giving Foundation?
Well, I would love for the audience to go online and check out the Giving Back Foundation, which is the givingbackfoundation.net. And also, I just want to say to my audience, do what you can, where you can, for whoever you can, because that's really our true purpose on this planet.
Amen. Thank you so much, Mira. God bless you, and thank you so much for all you do. You are a light and a gift to all of us. Thank you for your presence and your energy and your soul and spirit. You are such a blessing. And again, thank you for being on Unlimited Reality. It's truly a gift. God bless you.
Thank you, Lisa. Okay, good night. Goodbye.
Good night. Bye-bye.